All right, well, good morning, church. For those of you who are guests here today, my name is Sterling Shanks. I'm one of the ministers on staff at First Hurst, but you don't see me very often because I reside over at the Trails campus. I oversee adult and student discipleship for our Trails campus, but super excited to be with Norwood. It was like 12 years ago, the first time I worked at Hurst, I worked at the Norwood campus, so my love of Hurst started at Norwood, so super fun to be with y'all here today. I actually found out that I was preaching this Sunday, like in August, I think it was, and I was reading through in the book of Luke and reading particularly about the story of Mary and Martha in Luke chapter 10, and so I decided to look at that passage through the scope of what does it mean to choose what matters, and I thought it would be a great passage for us to look at as we are on our last Sunday of 2025, looking forward into the new year. But before we get to Luke chapter 10, verses 38 through 42, we have to first talk about the summer of 69. All right, so the summer of 69 was a super impactful summer in the life of our nation and in parts the world. There was a song written about it. I thought about thinking if it could be my walk-up song today, but I didn't know if that was sacrilegious, so I didn't do it. But in the summer of 69, for my younger people in the room that were like, I don't get why we're talking about the summer of 69, because that's really old, right? The summer of 69 was when we landed on the moon. The summer of 69 was Woodstock, which was this huge music festival. And for some of my older people in the room, you probably think I really short-sold what Woodstock was. But I wasn't there. But it also, like, hard things happened. The Manson murders happened that summer. The phrase peace, love, and rock and roll happened that summer. And I want y'all to know, the first and second services, I said peace, love, and y'all kind of did it for me. It was crickets the first two services, and I was like, I guess it's just me. So anyways, but peace, love, and rock and roll, and all these kind of things formed and shaped how people thought and how they chose to do things, and so it was just this historical summer that really impacted our culture, and so that's why we talk about the summer of 69. But for me, a summer that really impacted my life and the culture of how I do things was the summer of 08. All right, so instead of peace, love, and rock and roll, it was more like independence, challenges, and Sic'em Bears. Okay, so I had just finished my freshman year at Baylor, and I was heading into, sorry, y'all have to know why I paused for a second. I took what we called a victory lap, and so it was like, I was a fifth-year senior. It was actually summer after my sophomore year, but I kind of just like don't even cognizantly count freshman year. It was like a wash. But sophomore is like when things started for me. But so this was summer after sophomore year. I was living in an apartment with some of my best friends. We would go to class in the morning from like 8 to 10, and then we would go to the gym, and we would be there for 3 hours. I was in the best shape of my life. We would do cardio for an hour. We would do weights for an hour, and then for like an hour or more, we would play basketball or sand volleyball or racquetball. I could run a mile in 6 minutes. If I chased my five-year-old for 6 minutes, I'm dead now, right? And so it was just, then we would finish at the gym, we'd go have lunch, and then the rest of the day was ours, because like sometimes we'd study, but it was just this amazing free summer. I got super involved in my church. I got talked into, I'm starting to lead a freshman guy's Bible study. It was just this transformative summer in my life, socially, spiritually, independently, and I cherish that summer. I look back on it so fondly, and it all led up to, in August, everyone was coming back to school, and I did this thing called Welcome Week group leaders. And Welcome Week group leaders were the people who were sophomore through seniors who you would kind of get a partner. And I was with my friend Mary, and we would get a group of freshmen, and those people were there to indoctrinate the freshmen into why Baylor was so great, and we would go to pep rallies and dances and teach them about Baylor. And so Mary and I were given our group of freshmen, and they were the engineer majors. All right, now I want y'all to know, I heard a few laughs in the 9:30 service. Everyone rolled laughing at engineer majors, so I don't know what inside jokes people had about that. But what I can tell you, engineer majors were reliable. All right, they, like, when I was a freshman, so many people would sleep into the early stuff. 100% attendance from the engineer majors. And that's just why they're so successful, right? They're reliable. When we would ask questions in group time, they would all interact with us. I loved the engineer majors. There was this one guy in particular that I grew really close with. And he, I look back on summer of 08 and I loved it. He probably to this day looks back on the summer of 08 and loathes it. He had had traumatic things happen in his family. He was struggling with identity. He was dealing with doubts of faith and just wasn't landing great starting in his freshman year in Waco. And I was someone that he would confide in. Now, the one thing I did not tell you, also in the summer of 08, I also call that like BM before Meredith, who's my wife, because there was this girl who I was convinced was going to be my wife. And it's nothing to disparage her. Obviously, I'm so thankful she was not my wife. Meredith was much more perfect of a match for me than that girl was. But I was into her that summer. And so school had started. It was like September. And this guy texts me, the one who was in my group. And he said, hey, can we meet for lunch? I really need to talk. And he goes, I'm really struggling with something. And I just need to talk to someone. And I was like, absolutely. Going into junior year, I was so involved. I was a music major. I was in four choirs. I was taking the maximum amount of hours you could do at Baylor. I was involved in my church. I led a Bible study. I was in a fraternity. I was three officer positions in my fraternity while still having a social life and pursuing before Meredith, right? And so I was so good at doing so much. And I held so many positions and so many people relied on me. And I would love to flex with you about how good I was at so many things. And so he said, can we meet? And I said, absolutely, I can do anything. And so then the night before I'm supposed to have lunch with him at MIMO Memorial, that was one of the cafeterias at Baylor, before Meredith texts me. And she says, hey. I imagine that's how it sounded. It was a text message. I don't know what the inflection was. But I said, hey. And she said, do you want to have lunch tomorrow? And there was also this other person who was also vying for her attention. And so I had to get my time in. And so I was like, oh, man, I have that lunch. Yes. So I say yes. And I'm like, it'll work out. I'll fix this. We're going to have lunch together. And so I invite her to my lunch with this person who's expecting one-on-one time with me. And so we get, I know. So we get to lunch, and she goes to grab her lunch, and we sit down, and I was like, hey, I know that we were supposed to have lunch together, but you remember before Meredith, right? And she wanted to have lunch, and you know, I can't say no. And so I know you had some, like, she's a Christian too, so like, if you have things you want to talk about, we can talk about it, and then if there's anything else that like you don't want to say in front of her, we can talk like after or later. And immediately, I see disappointment go across his face, and I realized I had screwed up, and I was distracted. And I'm going to tell you what happened with the rest of that story in a little bit, but first, we are going to go to Luke chapter 10. I will tell y'all, it's not a great ending, all right? So Luke chapter 2, verses 38 through 42. Now, as they went on their way, Jesus entered a village, and a woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. And she had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to his teaching. But Martha was distracted with much serving. And when she went up to him and said, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Tell her to help me. But the Lord answered her, Martha, Martha, you are anxious and troubled about many things. But only one thing is necessary. Mary has chosen the good portion, which will not be taken away from her. Now, one of the reasons I want to do this passage is I would bet there are a lot more Marthas in here than Marys. And this is coming from someone who has to battle his inner Martha all the time. I think Martha is one of the most relatable people in Scripture. And to give you an example of, well, Sterling, how are you, Martha? One time, we had this long meeting with all student ministry staff. And then afterwards, we went to lunch with Jason. And so we sat down, and Jason was just making conversation at In-N-Out. And he said, well, how was y'all's morning? And Thomas Black said, it was great. We had such a productive morning. And I was like, I did not think we had a productive morning. And he was like, no, like we talked about what we would do here in a year from now. And we talked about this Bible study or that Bible study. And Jason goes, let me ask you this. Did you leave with anything with actionable points of things accomplished or things you were going to do? And he was like, no, we just got to wonder and dream. And Jason goes, Sterling thought that meeting was worthless. Because here's the deal. Y'all don't, maybe some of you know this. At our church, we have all of our staff members take the widget test. And it talks about, it's your working genius test, your strengths and your weaknesses, who frustrates you. And so it taught me so much because I am enablement. I love to make people's dreams a reality. I love to hear a cause and make it happen. And discernment. I love to see something and think, oh, this will work, but this won't. What can frustrate me on the widget thing is invention and wonderment. And those are people who sit and they think about how to redo the wheel. They think about, well, you know, this candle every year at Christmas has been here. But like, what if we moved it just a little bit over here? And that drives me wild. Like, I'm like, it has been this way for so long. Why are we even talking about this? Because we have all these other things to do, right? But sometimes you need to rethink the wheel. Sometimes you need to invent things. And it taught me everyone's giftings matter, right? But I can get frustrated because I have an inner Martha that's like, we have got stuff to do. Okay, so I vibe with Martha. But my first point for you this morning is before we see anything about Martha, you see the call to sit at Jesus's feet. True renewal begins with Jesus himself, not our performance. Actually, and when you read that Mary sat at Jesus's feet, in Jewish culture, that was a sign of discipleship. So Mary was showing with her posture that she was a disciple of Jesus in that moment. And so true renewal begins with Jesus himself, not our performance. But many of us are driven by a performative nature because we are the foundation of our life, because we're able to accomplish so much and we're so proud of it. And we rely on ourselves so much that like Jesus becomes an accessory in our life, but he's not the foundation of our life. And so I'm encouraging you this morning to make space to be with Jesus daily before filling your calendars with more activity. There you go. If you looked at my Google Calendar right now, if you take a spiritual giftings test, there's all these different spiritual giftings tests, but my wife, Meredith, gets a hard administration every single time as her top gifting. She's one of the most administratively gifted people I've ever met, and we're able to do so many things with excellence because she's so administratively gifted. If you looked at our Google Calendar, it's color coordinated by my work things, our family things, our kids things, Meredith things, and then there's like one more color for extra things, right? And so I can see my whole life planned out for the next 2 years. Like 20% of it's because of me and 80% of it's because of Meredith. Okay, she's a great planner. But sometimes you have to see, have I filled my calendar with so much that I'm missing the main calling in my life? Because Mary saw something that Martha didn't. Because Mary knew there was a call to sit at Jesus's feet and be discipled. So why was Martha struggling? It brings me to my next point, which is there is a danger of distraction. Distractions aren't always sinful, but they can still rob you from what is best. All those things I was involved with that I told you at Baylor, all the choirs, the fraternity, none of those were inherently bad. This room is filled with people's involvements. We have families and spouses and jobs represented in here, people who volunteer at nonprofits. We have teenagers and children who are involved in so many things in their schools and extracurricular activities, and none of those are inherently bad. But when we've busied ourselves so much that we're distracted, that we miss what is best, right? When you look at Martha, she was so, am I doing good things but missing the best thing? Because if you look at Martha, what Martha was doing was not inherently bad. She was trying to be hospitable. And actually, if you go to the original translation, the type of words Martha was doing denote that it was really more familiar in nature when she was talking to Jesus. It wasn't proper, so that you can infer it wasn't Martha's first time interacting with Jesus. They had already had a relationship. So it wasn't like, when I'm familiar with my spouse and we're trying to get stuff done in the house, we were cleaning our house yesterday because after lunch today, we're heading to Meredith's parents in East Texas, but we were getting a lot done. But I wasn't like, dearest, will you come to me in this living room and help me tidy up in here? And then we will go one by one and clean the bathroom and the living room. And my children, will you sit here? No, I was like, hey, babe, I'm scrubbing the toilet. Can you come in here and deal with Iana? Because she's having a meltdown. And then we'll tackle the living room together. So Martha is saying, Jesus, we're together all the time. Mary is just sitting on her knees and I'm trying to clean the house for a nice time together, right? And Jesus is talking to someone who he affectionately loves and he's like, you're missing the best thing. Are you doing good things but missing the best thing? And so I was doing a lot of good things at Baylor, but here's what happened with that student. I chose to be distracted and I let a girl come to lunch that day, and he said almost nothing. And here's what's crazy. Sometimes we learn lessons and we're like, oh, I'll do that. But I have more time to fix it. I have more time. And so I was like, I screwed up in this moment, but I have more time. And so I felt convicted in that moment. How many times have y'all sat in a church service or had a hard conversation with someone and you were convicted in that moment to change, but then you were so distracted that you never changed? And so I was convicted in that moment that I had screwed up, but then I had my four choirs, and I had my fraternity, and my officer positions, and all my classes, and all my friends, and before Meredith, who I still liked for way too long. All right, she never wanted to date me. I just strung myself along for way too long. That's a whole nother sermon. But it came to Christmas time, and I was like, oh, you know what? I never followed up with him. I got too busy. And so I went to his Facebook just to see if he had posted being with his family, and he had made a long Facebook post about how he was vehemently an atheist and he was moving schools because he hated Baylor and everything faith represented. And I was like, oh no. And I texted him and I said, hey, I'm so sorry. I don't know. I think I apologized for this. He was like, you're fine, but I'm just not, he said, respectfully, I'm just not interested in talking. And it gutted me because I didn't have any more time. I thought I did, but I was so distracted that I missed the best thing. And at the end of the day, we're all accountable for our own actions. He's heard truth in his life, and he will stand one day and have to attest for what he chose to do with his life. But so do I. And I sinned by omission that day because I was distracted by so many things that I missed the best thing I could do, which was share the truth of Jesus with someone, because I was distracted with good things, but not the best thing. So Martha was distracted. Why was she distracted? The illusion of control. In verse 41, we see that it says, but the Lord answered her, Martha, Martha, you are anxious and troubled about many things. Busyness can come from believing everything depends on us. I remember when 2020 happened 5 years ago, and sometimes I think we like think it was just yesterday, but it was 5 years ago, right? That was a long time ago. But we realized, man, we are so busy, and it's kind of nice how things have slowed down. I am not ever going to find myself that busy again. I would argue that some of us are probably busier in 2025 than we were in 2019 because we learned like, oh, I should have boundaries. I should say yes to things. I should say no to things. Matthew 5:37 says, let your yes be yes and your no be no. But we say yes a lot and then we have to waver on what we said yes to because we're so busy because we want control over everything. Business comes from believing everything depends on us, right? I'm not saying that men in the room haven't dealt with this, but I know from my wife's own experience and many women I've talked to, feel the weight of carrying the holiday season. You plan the magic memories, you make sure that the schedule's in place, you make sure that gifts are bought for family and friends and loved ones. And so like Santa came to our house on Sunday morning, but we also got gifts for our kids. And I remember two nights before I was sitting with Meredith and I was watching this reel on Instagram of like some woman being like, when my husband's surprised on Christmas morning what my kids got. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's me, right? Because some things my kids opened, I was like, well, that's cool. I didn't know you were getting that, right? But some of you felt the weight because you think everything in your home depends on you. Your kids depend on you so much that they wouldn't be anything without you. Some of you at your jobs, you feel the weight of the world and that everyone depends on you. When I was in high school, I was so involved with choir. There's this thing called madrigal, which is a chamber choir where you dress up in medieval clothes. It's a real thing and I loved it. All right, I was the king. I was president of choir and I convinced myself, everyone depends on me. And the fact of the matter is, when you make everyone depend on you, what happens when you're gone? When everyone depends on you and you're the foundation of their life because you've busied yourself so much convincing yourself that, what happens when you're gone? Because Jesus isn't the foundation of their life. You've made it so that everyone depends on you. And that's not a good place for you to be, and that's not a good place for the people in your life to be. Busyness comes from believing everything depends on you. Busyness is also a form of laziness. Because some of us are so busy with so many things that you miss sometimes the best things. I was busy with so many things that I missed the best conversation I could have had with that person. How often do you have so much going on in your week and then someone says, hey, I really need to have a conversation about my kid because they're struggling with this. Or could you, I'm in such a tough bind. Could you pick up my kid and bring him home today? And you're like, oh, I'm so sorry, but I'm busy. We like almost love that we're so busy, that if things come in our way that are inconvenient or not fun, it's easy just to say, I'm so sorry, I'm busy, right? Busyness can be a form of laziness because you've let yourself become so busy that you miss opportunities for the best things. Because let's be honest, if you were really honest with yourself, even when you love someone, sometimes when you have a loved one going through something hard, sometimes it's just draining to keep talking to them. And so like I loved that student, but we never had any fun conversations. It was always him processing his grief because he was going through a really hard time. But in that moment, sinful 21-year-old Sterling talking to a girl I was interested in sounded way better than having another hard conversation. And so it was easy to be like, oh, I'm so busy, and lean into being lazy instead of doing what God called me to do. And so how often have you missed being in God's word or praying or discipling your family or honoring God at work or telling someone about Jesus because you've just been so busy that you're lazy in doing what God has called you to do? Busyness also brings anxiousness. I wrote in my notes, anxiety is the fruit of misplaced priorities. When you busy yourself so much, you become anxious because you've misplaced your priorities. Martha was so stressed because her priorities were misplaced. She was more focused on making the house nice, which again is not wrong, that she missed getting to kneel down and lean into being a disciple and learning more of what it meant to follow Jesus. And so sometimes you allow yourself to be so anxious because you've busied yourself so much. Proverbs 19:21 says, many are the plans of a man's heart, but the Lord determines his steps. And some of you have such a tight grip on control of how you think your life is supposed to go and how your kids are supposed to act and the choices your kids are supposed to make and what everyone at work is supposed to do and how your spouse should be acting and what they're supposed to be, that you're crippled by anxiousness because the fact of the matter is you don't have control. You've just convinced yourself that you're supposed to. I wrote my other thing in my note. I put, you don't hold the world together. Jesus does. And so when you decide that you're in control and you're so busy and you begin to be anxious, it's because you're putting the weight of the world on yourself when you were never meant to, because Jesus does that for us. And so you've allowed yourself to have distraction and the illusion of control. So why did Martha have such a hard time seeing what Mary saw? It's because Martha was distracted and she had the illusion of control. But what are we supposed to do? It's the promise of the one thing. In verse 42, Jesus first says, but one thing is necessary. Mary has chosen the good portion. Everything else will fade, but Christ will remain. I flexed a lot of things in my life. I told y'all that I was in all these choirs and I was elected to this. I didn't even tell y'all. I was also a senior class officer. I was treasurer. Who cares? None of you, right? Because it was a cool thing at the time, but 20 years later, those were fun things. I learned a lot of things, but 20 years later, it doesn't change anything with how I interact with y'all. It doesn't impact you because they're fleeting, right? I had relationships and friendships that I thought would last for forever, and I love those people, but time has changed things, and I don't talk to them as much, but I sure stressed myself out a lot with my choirs and my officer positions and my fraternity and my grades and my relationships and a girl that I was convinced was my wife that was never my wife, because I was so distracted and so illusioned with my control, disillusioned, that I missed the best thing for so long. Everything else will fade, but Christ remains. So I'm encouraging you to choose the one thing above all else. Now here's the problem. A lot of us know I know Jesus is supposed to be the foundation of my life, but the fact of the matter is, some of you do love your job, you do love your friends, you do love your involvements, and you don't want to lay those things down because you haven't seen the benefit of the best thing, because you're still reliant upon those things more than Jesus, but those things are fleeting. And so if you're asking yourself, so I'm supposed to choose the best thing, but why is that important? It's because there is a reward for choosing what matters. A year spent walking with him will not be wasted. A year spent walking with Jesus will not be wasted. I dare you to spend more time in the Word each day. I dare you to pray each day. I dare you to be more intentional about pursuing your spouse. I dare you to disciple your kids this year more steadfastly. I dare you to get rid of the language you use in the locker room or in your classrooms or in your place at work or wherever you are, to talk about Jesus in those places and to be a light to other people, and come back to me in a year and tell me it wasn't worth anything, because I'll be shocked. Because a year spent walking with him will not be wasted. I told y'all that I wrote this sermon in like August or September. That's what I like write something and then I come back to it later. I didn't know what I would be dealing with in November and December. But 8 weeks ago, someone super close in my life was diagnosed with cancer. And there's a lot of unknowns in my life right now. And I just feel like I've been in a fog for 2 months. And I know there are people in here that can relate to that story. And we know those things are hard, but it's different when you're in those shoes, right? And it's immediately affecting your life and your kids' lives and your family's life. And so I didn't know how much I needed to hear this thing that I wrote in August of choosing what matters, because I want to ask you, when you look back at the end of 2026, will you be proud of what you chased or regretful of what you ignored? Because I told you, I sat at a lunch one time and Jason was like, were actionable things done? Did you get what you needed to get done? No, because sometimes Sterling thinks then it was worthless. But sometimes letting go and just focusing on the thing that matters is what matters most. And I can get caught up in social interactions and differing opinions and drama and stuff like that, but it doesn't matter. And so I don't know what you sit here today and that you're distracted by, or you're trying to control, when that's just silly to try to control something that you have no control over. But I'm just encouraging you, as someone who loves this church, and I love the people of this church, and just sharing what I'm going through, that I hope, because I care about you, that you look back at the end of 2026 and you can say you're proud of what you chased and not regretful of what you ignored. Because if I could go back to the summer of 08, I would have said no to that text message to that girl, and I wish I could go back to that person. And I want y'all to know, I've tried, but just, I'm not saying what God can and can't do in that person's life, but I messed up the door of me being the person that could speak truth into that person's life anymore because of a choice I made. But I wish I could go back, because I had regrets. I loved that summer, but it was just kind of laced with regret of missing something that mattered. And I wish I could apologize to him and tell him that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the light. And I wish he knew Jesus, but he doesn't. And so I don't want you to live with regret. I want you to choose what matters. There is a call to sit at Jesus' feet, but many of us in here get distracted or try to control things. But there is a promise of the one thing, and it's the best thing, and we should choose what matters. Don't just make don't make resolutions this year. Choose to follow Jesus this year, to make him the foundation of your life. I'm going to pray for us, and then we'll continue with our morning. Heavenly Father, I thank you so much for your word. I thank you for the story of Mary and Martha, and just a reminder of the calling that we have on our life. I thank you for what you have done in our life. We were just reminded in the Christmas season that you sent your son to die for us, and that he was a gift. And sometimes we forget that gift because we get so distracted by life and the busyness that we have and the control that we want over our life. But I pray that you stir in this room today and give us wisdom and discernment on how we can be saying yes and no to things, that we can choose what matters. I believe so much in this church and what we can do for our families and our spouses and our communities. So I pray as we head into this next year that we put kingdom first, and that we choose what matters. And you use the men and women and teenagers and children in this room to be a light to others, God, that you are the foundation of our life and that you are honored and glorified by what we do. We love you and ask all these things in your son's holy name. Amen.